Welcome. You've entered Jobber's Court. I'm Rasquatch, King of Jobber's Court, and these two individuals are going to be my serfs for the day. I'm going to kick them around, and I'm going to make them talk with me about wrestling here for about an hour. So why don't you guys go ahead and introduce yourselves?
Hey, I'm Cody Hauk. I go by Mr. Hauk Standing, Mr. Haukamania, Haukules, and the Incredible Hauk. But since you're the king, you can call me whatever you want.
Fair enough.
Alrighty, you got here's Cedric Cologne, also known as Cedric the Sports Entertainer, the original, and all hail the king, King Rasquash.
That's right. I think Cedric the not so entertaining. That's what's gonna happen.
That's terrible.
It's a good first jab thrown.
It has begun.
Fear the wrath.
To get over in this crowd, man.
Yeah, it's tough. So anyway, just a bit of background. We're doing this mainly just because we had decided we just wanted to sit and BS about wrestling for about an hour. So you're just getting a look into our minds, and we're just going to BS as if we would normally BS. We're just sitting around talking about wrestling. So the first thing, just for our listeners out there to sort of get to know us a little bit better, I kind of wanted to see what you guys think as far as you, what moment that you can first remember that really got you hooked on watching wrestling. Cody, why don't you go ahead and start?
Well, I was probably about 5 or 6. I don't remember exactly how old I was, but I went over to one of my buddy's houses, and his parents had ordered WrestleMania, and my family doesn't like wrestling. They don't do wrestling. So this is my first exposure to it, and that whole thing was just fantastic. And the moment that really caught my eye, and surprisingly enough, it was the ladder match between Razor Ramon and Shawn Michaels, and just seeing all the carnage and everything that they're doing, just going back and forth, is like, wow, this is crazy. And so about once a week, I'd head over to my buddy Kenny's house, and we watched wrestling on TV, and I really just super got into it. That was right before the Attitude Era really kicked off. And I wouldn't say I was a regular at that time, but probably right around 95, 96, I started watching religiously during the Monday Night Wars, so switching back and forth between Nitro and Raw. And I just couldn't get enough of it. Back then, I thought it was real. And what really hooked me was a few years later, when my grandpa had took me to a casino where they had an ECW event going on. And the main event was Doink the Clown, if you guys remember that crazy guy.
Absolutely.
Tito Santana, a guy who never really got truly over, but he was still pretty fantastic. And I never realized it was fake until I got right up there and watched it. Well, when I say fake, you know what I mean. Predetermined, we'll put it that way. And when I realized that they were putting on a show, that's what really truly got me into it. Like, these guys are performers, and they're sacrificing everything they can, throwing garbage cans at each other. It was just the whole concept of everything made me truly fall in love with it. And that's what I like about it, is that it's live theater mixed with extreme athletics. You can't get that anywhere else.
Oh, yeah, totally agree, and I think that's something that is kind of similar to what my story is, but I'll tell that here in just a second. Cedric, how about you?
Well, first of all, let me start by saying it's fake.
Yeah, it's not fake. It's predetermined.
That's the first for me.
But, it's been real to me, damn it.
Probably being the oldest one in this group, you know, the memories kind of come and gone, so I don't really remember the actual first time that I watched wrestling, but I do remember as a kid even watching the cartoons with the Hulkster, Wendy, and the gang on TV. I think it was on black and white TV, but let me not date myself too much there. But I do remember as a kid not being able to watch Saturday night's main event, and one particularly, I think it was the Hulkster versus Paul Orndorff in a steel cage match for the back then WWF championship. I remember the disappointment, so I'm pretty sure as a kid, that must have been something that I really appreciated. But I think from the moment that I saw the Hulkster come out to his music, I was hooked. And to see these larger-than-life characters back in the day, it was something that, as a child, who did not inspire to be one of these guys, you know, the big, flashy body doing these crazy feats of strength, you know, picking up your own version of Andre the Giant and whatnot and carrying that belt. And the tradition has kept on going through all these years. I have three kids, and each one of them has been introduced to wrestling, and they all have their favorite wrestler. So for me, it's some people call it the man's version of a soap opera, and to be honest, that's what it seems like. I won't miss it every week. So
yeah, and you know, that's a good point. And I was a huge Hulk Hogan fan, like when I was a kid. I think for me, it goes back to one of my first memories was seeing Demolition. It would have been like 88 or 89. For some reason, like SummerSlam 88 just sticks out in my mind, and Demolition is doing this this promo, and I just remember the makeup and their whole outfit and Mr. Fuji, and you know, and I was like, man, these guys are pretty cool. But then, you know, I got to see them, and I was like, they're just awful. These are just evil guys. Like, you know, why are they cheating all the time? And, you know, and I remember, like, it bothered me as a kid. And then I watched Randy Savage get bit by a cobra.
Yeah.
And from that moment on, when I watched Randy Savage get bit by that cobra, when Jake the Snake, you know, basically taunted him into the ring, trapped him, gets bit by the cobra, and then you got Vince McMahon, I don't think that snake's been devenomized, and he's just yelling, and Randy Savage is flailing around the ring, and then they take him out on, like, the stretcher, and I was like, I can't stop watching this. And, I mean, I didn't want to miss a week at all after that. So I think for me, that's probably what sort of got me into it the most. And then, obviously, memories of the Attitude Era in general. Once that all started, I used to cook dinner every Monday night, and me and my grandma, my wife now, would all sit down and we'd watch wrestling together. I'd always tell my wife, I can't do anything on Mondays because I gotta watch wrestling. As mad as she'd be about it, she'd come over and we'd sit and watch. She liked The Rock, so she'd watch it just to watch The Rock. But yeah, I think to me that's probably my fondest memories.
Shoot, I remember when I was in Puerto Rico, we didn't have cable TV, so having cable TV was a luxury. And I used to, as messed up, as dressed as I was, some little shorty shorts and a T-shirt, and some flip-flops, I would go to the local sports bar. I wasn't supposed to be allowed because of my age, but fortunately, they saw me so many times that they allowed me to come in. And every Monday, I had two TVs in my corner, one on WWF back in the day and the other one on WCW, and I was just hooked. That's how hooked I was. I was actually going to sports pub. I wasn't even allowed to, just to watch something.
That's an awesome thing, because I was kind of a flip-flopper. I didn't watch a lot of WCW, to be honest. That's why the network's been so great, so I can catch up on all these episodes of Nitro that I never got to watch. But yeah, I would flip back and forth. The wrestling style is so different from what you saw in WCW versus what they did in WWF. So I think I just preferred the WWF style more than the WCW style. But that's hardcore, man, and that's good, you know. I probably watch wrestling more now than I ever did, mainly because I got ECW, which I'd never really seen. It's on the network now. And then all of the different stuff that you can watch. Speaking of events, my favorite pay-per-view of the year is coming up, and that's the Royal Rumble on the 24th of January. And it's going to be for the title, so only the second time that's ever happened. And the first time was 1992 when Ric Flair was in there an hour, won the title, which is my favorite Rumble match of all time and actually in the top five matches I've ever seen. How do you guys feel about the Royal Rumble in general, where it stacks up compared to the other pay-per-views?
Oh, you gotta give the Royal Rumble is probably one of the most entertaining and unique matches, just because you have so many people in the ring at the same time. I will say the last couple of years, kind of just because it was so predictable on who was gonna win. My favorite Royal Rumble of all time had to be when Shawn Michaels entered as number one and went the entire way and won it. That was fantastic. But then again, I'm a Shawn Michaels fanboy, so.
That was 95. I just got done watching that one, and you know, the only issue I had with it was they were only entering every 1 minute. So Shawn was only in there. Shawn was only in there like 40 minutes. To win the Rumble. So as I did enjoy that Rumble. I actually watched that one like live as a kid. I remember that one. It was because I was only allowed to get one pay-per-view a year, and I would get the Rumble every year. I remember watching that one live, and I remember thinking, oh, it was awesome. He went number one, and then now as an adult, I look back at it, and I go, man, it was 1 minute each person. He was only in there. 30-40 minutes. So to me, it tainted that a little bit for me, but that was a good Rumble too. What about you, Cedric? What do you think of the Rumble matches?
Oh, guys, you guys surprised me with your, like I said, your memories. I think I'm the oldest one here. I don't got too many dates on top of my head, but to be specific on the Royal Rumble, I think for me, what always did it for me was not knowing who was going to come in. Yeah, you had your regular roster members, but you always had that surprise guest appearance from an old school wrestler or somebody who had been hurt and you weren't sure they were going to come in, or someone that you would never even think these guys are going to show up on again. I remember one of the latest ones when Diesel came in. Yep. It was the way you would read things online. It was almost like there's no way this man's ever going to come back. He's not going to dye his hair black. Things between him and the corporate leadership is not very well, so why would he come back? And next thing you know, his music goes off, and you're like, wait a minute. So yeah, that was, to me, that's the best part of the Royal Rumble, just not knowing who was going to come in. And I agree with the Hulkies here, Hulk standing. It is true. These past few ones, it's been a little bit in the low end of who's going to come out, but that's always one of my favorite things, not knowing who's going to show up. And as predictable as it is, I would always try to focus on that. So,
yeah, and the spots are so much better these last like 5 or 6 years that they add into these things, because the amount of athleticism these guys have now is so amazing. But DDP got a good pop last year, and he was one of like the high spots of the whole Rumble for me. The fact, like, I loved A, that he came out, and then B, I think he hit like 4 diamond cutters like in a row.
Randy Orton's got nothing on the diamond cutter,
man. Yeah, I was saying, heck, he stole that from Johnny Ace, the Ace Crusher, from if we go even further back than that. But
DDP yoga kept him in shape.
Yeah, well, he didn't look like he was in that great a shape to me, but it was still awesome to see him. And then obviously him out there hitting that diamond cutter over and over and over was pretty awesome. Just that one spot, like, if you can just get me one. It was like, I think it was 2000, I want to say it was 2005 or 2006, something like that. It might have been the 06 Rumble, and Tatanka comes out. Now, I was a huge Tatanka fan, like, back in the early 90s anyway, of course, you know, from a Native American background and all that. I love Tatanka.
Oh, yes, it's okay.
And it was just, I hadn't seen him in so long and had no idea he was there. Then you hear that. You know, you hear the war cry ring out, and dum, da da dum, 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 and the music sounds off, and out he comes running, and oh man, I was so excited. Definitely the Rumble pop is something that, I think the biggest one of all time to me is probably when Cena entered at 30.
Yeah.
And
that is true.
Nobody knew, like, even the wrestlers didn't know.
Is that when he came back from that pec surgery?
Yeah, and he was back like a month early.
Yeah.
Nobody had any idea he was going to be there. And I think, like, those are the best ones, because even us, like the Smarks, the internet wrestling community, we had no idea that he was going to be there. And that, to me, that's the best when you can put one over on those guys.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Last year, for example, I think almost everybody knew that Bubba Ray was going to be coming back. But as soon as he came back, everyone was like, where's Devon?
Yeah.
He never showed. It was like, yeah, okay. But exactly when you're talking about DDP, no one really expected DDP to come out there at, what, 58, I think he is, 59?
He's something. Like, wow. Yeah, he's old. Yeah.
It's 100.
Yeah, he just might as well be.
I even enjoy seeing somebody like Santino Moretta, his music coming off. You see him all determined. You see in his face, like, his face is telling you, yes, I'm coming in. I'm going to win this. And not even seconds later, he's eliminated. He's like, I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready. And then, come on now.
And then Santino doing that power walk thing down to the ring. So, you know, I had this idea when Santino was still actively wrestling. And I said, you know what they should do? They should have, like, 29 come out, and he's in the process of clearing the ring, and he eliminates him, like, accidentally eliminates himself as well as the last person he was trying to throw out, and then have Santino come out as number 30, and then all he has to do is walk into the ring, and he wins the Rumble. I thought that would have been, I thought that would have been the best thing ever, but I'm sure the fans probably wouldn't have appreciated it, but, oh, man, I'd have loved it. But,
well, kind of like with Curtis Axel, you know, he never actually entered the ring. So, I mean, technically, if he would have entered after Roman Reigns got out, would he have won?
Actually, no, because the rules state, the original Rumble rules, and I don't know if they hold on to these or not, but there was the first instance of this happening was back in 90, I want to say it was the 90 or 91 Rumble. The first person ever missed their call, and they didn't come out. They said that they had until the next entry made it to the ring to get in the ring. So technically he was eliminated. He would had a, technically he forfeited if they're following that. But you could make a case that, you know, he – but then they broke that rule later on. I think it was in 94 when Owen Hart doesn't make it to the ring until later, and then they allow him to stay in. So I don't know. Just depends on what, I guess, whatever rule they want to follow that day. But I think the official Rumble rule says that you forfeit if you don't make it to the ring by the time the next person comes in.
Yes, WrestleMania does not live forever.
Nope.
No, in his mind, it does.
Might as well go with it. He ain't got nothing else going on except trying to trying to group up with a bunch of other jobbers. Oh, man.
Hashtag social outcasts.
I don't get it. I really don't. I'm not into all these factions. A lot of people love factions, but they've got too many factions. You got New Day.
I agree with you 100% there. I'm okay with the League of Nations just because they were kind of like as the first out of this recent history to start pushing through after the New Day. But yeah, you got way too many people trying to group together now. And no story to go with it.
Yeah, well, some people say they like it. They're like, oh, well, I can just imagine, like, the locker rooms being split into all these little factions, and then it's almost like a gang fight every week, and which faction is going to be fighting with which faction. But I don't know. I guess I'm a little more old school than that, where if you have a faction, they should be a faction because they're super powerful. Like,
yeah, they shouldn't be losing every match.
Yeah, if the Wyatts were pushed correctly, like, they'd be one of the greatest things out there right now. If New Day does a great job working, but they're more of a trio, and technically I don't know if you'd consider them a faction or not. But I think that, you know, they do a good job. Like, the Wyatts are a legit faction. And I don't even mind League of Nations if League of Nations could come out and just, like, beat people up. But instead what you see is Roman Reigns beating up all four of them by himself and then sort of leaves you in a bad spot for that faction.
King Mara's got his own jobber's court.
he does. And, you know, and that's what, I guess that annoys me too, because Barrett can talk. I mean, he's a good talker, and they never let him talk.
I heard something about him having a shoulder injury or an elbow injury or something along those lines. That could be wrong.
He does. He has a neck issue.
I know that's kind of why they've been keeping him out of action. But you're absolutely right. He's the best talker out of all of them. So let him be the mouthpiece instead of Sheamus. Like,
I would say,
I like Sheamus and all, but
and if you make Barrett the leader, he doesn't have to wrestle. He can set the other guys up and just stand back and sort of talk. And he's a king. He can move his pawns around and let them do what they need to do. Because I know they're big on Sheamus and former world champion and all that. But I don't know. I really think
Barrett's should be the guy.
Yeah, and I think I don't see why you don't have him. I don't see why you don't have him lead it now.
So you guys don't want to hear Rusev talking? Come on now.
No, if I gotta watch him make out with Lana one more time, change the channel.
Yeah,
that's a whole other hour-long conversation there.
Yeah, that's a different topic for another day. In fact, let's not make it a topic. Let's just forget we even mentioned it.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm trying to get it out of my head right now. Nope, still there.
I will say this: when Rusev broke his ankle and was walking around, I was so waiting for somebody in the crowd to have a Rusev crutch sign.
Yeah.
That would be hilarious.
Or just people bring in crutches. That would be
cool. Yeah, there you go.
And I like Rusev. I think he's good at what he does. It's so weird that he went from like this such a dominant United States champion to what he's become now. And I blame John Cena. It is what it is, I guess, with those guys. You know, Kevin Owens was originally supposed to be part of that storyline, and then he got the flu, and couldn't be on that Raw. So because he missed that Raw, they substituted in Del Rio instead of Owens. And so, what do you think would have happened if you would have had Kevin Owens instead of Del Rio?
Honestly, I don't think I would have liked it. To be honest with you, I like Kevin Owens so much, just as that. Alone, I do what I want, I fight for myself, I fight for my family, and I'm going to beat the hell out of you kind of thing. I think putting him in a faction would almost kind of demean who he is and what he does.
Yeah, I could see that too. And then obviously I'm a big fan of Kevin Owens' work and like his trash talk throughout all the matches. And he's a good talker too. I was just picturing him as like he's in the faction, but he's still a lone wolf. So he's like the one that sort of would stir up the trouble in the faction.
Yeah. If to go back in time a little bit, I think if they put Kevin Owens in there, they'd have almost like a Nation of Domination type thing where Sheamus is supposed to be the head guy, like Farouk was supposed to be the head guy.
Yeah.
And Kevin Owens comes and does the whole Rock thing to him, beats him for the championship. I think that would have been a neat angle.
Yeah,
you have Roman Reigns being pushed so much, I don't see how that would really work too well right now.
Except the only difference is, I think Kevin Owens, like, I don't know, like, goes to powerbomb or kick or whatever it is when he goes to attack Sheamus, and then like the rest of the group beats him up. Why? Because he's Kevin Owens. But anyway, that's probably what would end up happening. But
In the WWE, for a faction to work, you know, it's always the storyline. How does creative book them? Because right now, it just came to mind when the young group of NXT came and kind of invaded WWE. That was an incredible angle.
Oh, yeah.
The
way it was being built originally with Wade Barrett, speaking of the man, being almost the head man of the group. The way they destroy Cena, the commentators, all that stuff. And then next thing you know, oh, someone got offended with, I guess, Daniel Bryan choking Michael Cole with his own tie. Next thing you know, the next week, there's almost like no mention of the Nexus.
Well, that was Justin Roberts, right, that he choked the tie?
Was it Justin Roberts? Okay, I think the old guy memory. every success story, even in this world of predetermined matches, who wins and who doesn't, it's the story. How do you book these guys? Sometimes they say, well, this guy can't talk. This guy can't wrestle. If you can book somebody correctly, they have been great stars that if you look back, you're like, wow, how did this guy even make it to become a legend? It was just the way you booked them. You know, if you give them the right material, it will work. So hopefully with this new era, like you were saying, Wrath, with the new little groups getting together, from three-man teams like the New Day to now four-person groups. Let's see. Hopefully it works. But if you book them correctly and you listen to the fans who's cheering the most, and don't be scared of who's getting booed the most, because that's part of it too. It can work.
And you bring up the best point, I think, of this whole conversation, and that people are scared to get heat now. And I think part of that reason is because everybody knows it's entertainment. It's like people are scared to not be liked now because they want to sell that merchandise and they want to, you know, make sure they're making that extra money. You know, back in the day, the heels were always paid more than the faces were. And that was because they knew they weren't going to be selling merchandise.
Yeah.
And so I think that's something that you look at now. I mean, what legitimate heels do you have in the company? There's not a lot. I mean, you could definitely count them on one hand. But I think looking at it, like Kevin Owens is one who he legitimately doesn't care if the crowd cheers or boos him. He tries to get the crowd to boo him. New Day, they try, but they're cool heels. Like, there's just nothing they can do about it. They're so entertaining.
Yeah, New Day is such an interesting faction because you're talking about just going out, don't be afraid to try anything new. When they first put the New Day together, people hated them. These guys are boring, they're lackluster, they're bland. And, like, what, 3 weeks later, they turn into, like, the hottest tag team out there right now.
Well, it's because go ahead.
No, I was going to say because they brought a fourth member, the trombone.
Yeah.
Yes.
Francesca.
That's the trombone's name again. But, no, I think honestly, when I was listening to them when they were on Chris Jericho's podcast, and they were talking about that, and they said, you know, like, hey, Vince comes up to us, and we got this idea, and we're gonna make you guys like, you know, like pastors, and that's gonna be your guys' whole gimmick. And they're like, what?
See that with the little choir thing. Yeah,
and they're like, we want to get you over, and we're gonna make you guys baby faces, and I mean, it's gonna go over big. And then so they were like, all right, we'll try it. And then they said, you know, the crowd hated it. So then, you know, Vince honestly told him, he's like, I don't know what went wrong. I thought they would love that. And, you know, they told him, they said, Vince, why don't you just let us do our thing for a bit, and if it, like, for 2 weeks, and if it's not working out, then shut us down, whatever you feel like you need to do. And they were able to turn the crowd over, you know, become that heel group. And for a while there, like, they had heat, and then all of a sudden all that started transforming into them being just so entertaining. And a lot of that's because now they're not regulated as much on their creative. And honestly,
Here's a script, go do it your work.
I mean, I think if you're gonna have a good program, everybody should only be working on bullet points. I don't ever think you should have a situation where creatives actually writing full lines for you to say. And I think that's really what hurts the product.
Yeah, I agree. Because you go back in time, this is probably very, very debatable. But to me personally, I think the talent and the roster that WWE has right now is probably the most athletic and the most well-trained group of people they've had in a long, long time. It's just so many people are, I don't know what to say, or here's a script, follow this verbatim, and the crowd can tell that they're memorizing rather than just speaking. And when you got guys like the New Day who just have that freedom, they're going to get over organically. Roman Reigns, you could tell everything he said was scripted, and didn't really believe what he was saying. But when you give him a few words to say, the guy is golden. He's just few and far in between when he has those awesome moments.
Yeah, I mean,
you just have to build on the strength of the person, of the wrestler, you know, of the athlete. Because if, you know, we're talking about of WWE, but you look at other organizations. Like, I'll give you a quick example. I've been hooked on lately on NJPW. Now, I don't know I don't know if there's even a storyline when I'm watching these guys wrestle. I just watch the wrestling, mm-hmm. You know. I watch other organizations like Ring of Honor. They probably have some sort of storyline, but I don't even know it. I just get hooked on the wrestling, you know. In WWE, I haven't seen a good storyline in a while. But then you have the guys, you know, you want, like you said earlier, you have the one guy who's not doing too well on the mic being the main talker. You know, don't be afraid of, you know, of getting to the crowd, not by his talking, but Roman Reigns, for example, the man has the build to just go in there, destroy, maybe say a few words, and then come back out. Like, I've read a lot of folks were so happy when they saw him do the destroying job on Triple H, how he just destroyed him with a chair and on Sheamus. Folks were kind of hoping that was the guy that was going to keep showing up every week, but then the next day he shows up much more calm, talking more, making jokes. So you really don't know who's coming. You know what I'm saying? You gotta build a character and keep going until maybe the fans themselves decide, hey, maybe this guy should turn kayfabe or become heel.
Yeah.
But you never know. It's like the Big Show. You never know which picture you're gonna get. So
I think he turns 8 times a year, Big Show.
But, or 8 times a day. You never know.
I think for me, we got to see more of that intense Roman Reigns on Monday. And that was nice to see because he was very short in his promo. He looked intense, and his words were few, and they were meaningful. Like when he said, hey, if you screw me, you know, you won't be picking your dad up from jail. You'll be picking him up from the hospital. And
that was golden.
That resonated. Now, some people said, oh, well, he should have said, like, from the morgue. But I think then, you know, you got to be careful because then with your sponsors and everything else, I get it. You can still build a good story that's PG.
In fact, you probably be flipping birds to get over.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that was just my generation, you know, of kids that just needed something different. And why did we need something that different? Because we had to sit through 93 through 95 where you had characters like Bastion Booger and freaking the Goon and all these just horrible gimmicks, and it was
Gobbledygooker.
Yeah, the Gobbledygooker. Yeah, it was absolutely the worst. Like, that's probably the worst time in wrestling. People complain so much today about, oh, wrestling's so bad. It's like, go watch Raw from 93 through 95 and watch the damn Repo Man, you know, running around. And you're like, oh my God, Skinner.
Kane is the evil dentist.
Oh yeah, Isaac Yankum, DDS. Who wants all that crap, you know? And it didn't even matter how good they could perform. But I think you brought up another good point there, Hawkster, and that was that they're so much more athletic now. And you know, the performances in the ring are probably the best that we've seen since maybe Ruthless Aggression, when you had Angle still wrestling, and, you know, you had Benoit, when you had, like, those really super good technical wrestlers. You're probably getting close to that level now. And you know why that is? It's because the roster is now starting to fill with independent guys that spent, you know, 5, 6, 10 years on the independent circuit before they got signed. WWE's whole thing was they never liked independent wrestlers. They wanted homegrown products. And in the past, I think that was the case because their style is so different from an indie style. The sports entertainment style versus New Japan's like strong style that they're going to use, completely different. But it's funny, both types of wrestling tell stories. One tells a story in the ring, and the other sort of tells the story outside of the ring. So I almost have to watch both of those differently.
It's completely different products. And, you talk about New Japan, you talk about WWE, and even look at PWG, where there really is no specific style in PWG. It's whatever they feel like doing at the moment. You know, you can go like super fast, everyone's doing flips, chaos, and then you have the two powerhouses going. And you'll have the occasional match in slow motion where even the crowd is cheering, this is awesome, in slow motion. And so many different styles that you have to watch it differently. You can't expect the same reaction from different shows.
Yeah, I was at an indie show with Pro Wrestling Epic, and I got to work commentary for their Epic 8 event, and they have like a tournament every year. And I remember watching that event and going, wow, they literally have a little bit of everything. They had this giant guy named Baracus, and he, like, beat up on three dudes. And then the next match they had, like, these two guys that were trained by Michael Elgin, and they were both very Ring of Honor technicians, and that was a great match. And then the guy who owns the company was a hardcore wrestler. He, you know, he fought Madman Pondo, you know, helped train him, and these types of things. So it was one of those things where, like, you literally saw, like, a little bit of his style was definitely, like, brutal. And the guy he was wrestling, I mean, he chopped the hell out of that guy over and over and over. And so, I mean, some of that was just like, man, but, I mean, you went there, and when you left, you went, I have seen, you know, almost the only thing you didn't get was, like, a Japanese style of a match. But you got to see pretty much everything else. And there was no, like, story. I think there were two promos in the whole, like, 3-hour event that they ended up having, but it was you know, stuff like that's entertaining too, and you can see different stuff. But
I guess what I'm trying to say, and you, both of you have really good valid points. My thing is, you know, if you're going to go with a good storyline, build that storyline. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Where you can see it building week after week and not just being dropped. Yes, injuries will happen. This is a real sport. You know, injuries will happen. And sometimes you have to put a storyline on hold. But we've seen storylines that because, oh, after a week or two, the audience didn't react to it, then it just gets dropped out of the blue. The good guy becomes bad or the bad guy becomes good, and you're like, wait a minute. And then even in the ring, like you guys said, the indie's one thing. The WWE sports entertainment is a whole different beast on its own. But wrestling, it, for me, should always be, at the end of the day, that wrestling, what happens in that ring, the story that's being told in that ring should be the main focus. And sometimes even I feel that it gets, I don't want to say cheapened because I don't think that's the correct word, but you see how someone was in the indie, even on NXT itself, and then all of a sudden they get called up and their whole style gets watered down slightly. And
yeah.
I just want to see the story, that the true story being told in the ring as well as outside the ring, and pick your poison. Know your guys. Know who's going to be the best on the mic and who's going to be the one to stand out in the ring, and don't try to flip-flop them or lessen their craft, so to speak.
I agree. As weird as it is saying this, and I never really realized this until probably just a few minutes ago, but I think really the best storyline as far as in-ring, out-of-ring, that the WWE has going right now is in the women's division. I mean, I'm finding myself that Becky Lynch and Charlotte, this whole underdog story, I'm not going to take a bathroom break anymore. Like, to me, that has me intrigued because that has the most continuity going forward right now.
Yeah, and I do like their matches, I don't think, have been as good as I thought Paige's and Charlotte's. And actually, Nikki Bella and Charlotte, I think, might have had some of the best matches when she was still. And for as much as people make fun of Nikki Bella, like that last match she had where she lost the title was like maybe the best I'd ever seen her perform. It was actually So I don't know. I think sometimes you just click, you know, athletically with someone. But yeah, you're right. From a storyline perspective, that might be the best thing that we're seeing right now. You know, part of the problem is, there's no more enhancement talent or jobbers. Those guys don't exist anymore.
Yeah, you don't pick up random guys anymore just for a 2-minute match anymore. Well, if you do, it's down at NXT and not in the main roster.
Well, and you can't because the fans get pissed because they're like, oh, well, that's like my favorite indie guy from whatever the area. And if you come in and have him do like a 3-minute job, then they get pissed off. Because look what they did with Goldberg. What, you know, 171 wins in a row. I mean, granted, there was 171 wins, but it was, you know, when he first started, it was legitimate just jobbers, and he beat the living crap out of them, you know.
Yeah.
And then they started working up to where the guys got a little bit more and a little bit more legit. And they actually did that with Ryback when he first came in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I actually enjoyed that. Even though the build was very similar to Goldberg, I still looked at it and went, wow, you know.
Goldberg! This guy's,
yeah, so powerful. And even, shit, even in, I think in like, when 1-2-3 Kid first started, he was a jobber. They let him get that win, and they sort of built on that.
Oh, my gosh.
But then,
wait, he beat Razor Ramon? What just happened?
Yeah. But then, yep,
I just saw that fight. That is true.
Then they started giving him jobbers. Yeah. So then 1-2-3 Kid would go up against some enhancement guy, and they'd go 4 minutes, 5 minutes, and 1-2-3 Kid would beat him. And then so now you've built him slowly. So he has this big win over Razor. You keep that momentum. You let him battle these sort of underlings for, you know, a little while. And then, you know, then it goes on. You can actually start integrating him into the storyline. And I think that's why I get so upset when people get mad when NXT people come to the main roster and they're not pushed right away. Should they be? NXT is, I mean, it's supposed to be the undercard. So it'd be like if your favorite UFC fighter showed up and on their first fight they were in the main event. It just it doesn't make sense to me. You gotta earn your way up there. Like Kevin Owens is an exception, not the rule, in my opinion. I think he's, you know, it's one of those things where you look at certain people and you go, look, we can't wait. Like the time's now, and part of it's because he's in his prime already. He's not a young guy.
Hey,
I know we're jumping from one topic to the other, but it's entertaining. It's interesting. Just right now, what you just said is a whole topic on its own, because I'm gonna throw some names. For example, James Storm, Samoa Joe. A lot of folks were saying, why are they on NXT? These guys have been running around the indie circuit for decades, and some of these indie circuits in the overseas world, they're not so much indies. They are the WWE version of that country. Yeah. So these guys have been going around for a while, and some folks thought that that might be another reason why James Storm didn't sign, although it ended up being more for the money reason. But staying in topic, like you said, some of these guys are already primed to be on the main roster, maybe winning strongly, and some of them, even though they're big names in the indie circuit, they shouldn't be winning from their first match the championship. We've seen how well that has worked out in the past, both in the men and the women division, where the first match is a championship match you win, and next thing you know, it's like, what else is there to see? If you start from the top, you only have the bottom to look forward to. So,
yeah, exactly. And going back to the jobber thing, and an idea that I think would help bring up enhancement talent, some of these newer guys, or even some of the guys that are supposed to be built up, like the powerhouses, like the Wyatt family, for example. Bring some of these brand new guys that are in NXT that haven't made it to TV, bring them up for a job or thing, like some unknown guy or whatever, because nobody knows who they are. Feed them, you know, let them pay their dues, instead of this guy who spent 2-3 years working up, finally starting getting over, now he's going to lose 12 matches in a row. Maybe nobody knows.
Well, I think the problem is as much as I like NXT, I don't like NXT fans. Most of you, like, they're very, like, elitist to me, a lot of them. These ones that are super hardcore NXT fans. And sometimes I guess that, like, even the crowds at the shows sort of get on my nerves, because sometimes I think, like, the crowd's trying to get themselves over more so than the wrestlers. And I don't know if it's just maybe the type of crowd that they have normally, or just whatever it might be. But I know, like, if you were to bring, like, say you brought Enzo and Cass up and had them get beat up by the Ascension or something, right? Oh. Or, you know, you have Dashwall or whatever, and come up and have one of these guys get beat up, people would just be furious, because they want to see these guys come to the main roster. And so when they do, the casual wrestling fan has no idea who the hell these guys are. And they're like, oh, look at this turd. And then the rest of the crowd that's NXT fans are, like, cheering like crazy. But it's a confusing time, I think. And it's hard to pull guys out. But you've got a bunch of people who are training back there who may not be necessarily ready for their first match. But the important thing about enhancement talent is if you go back to the late 80s and early 90s, you had guys like Barry Horowitz and some of that used to push these guys. The one thing they could do is they could sell. That's why, like, to me, if Dolph Ziggler was a jobber, I honestly think I would probably like him more than what I like him now. Because Dolph Ziggler can make your offense look like it is the most painful thing he's ever experienced in his life. He's so good at that. But I'm just bored and tired of him as a wrestler. He's not the next coming, you know, of Shawn Michaels. But if he was in there and they had him, you know, just if he just was one of those guys that they brought out a couple times a month to get beat up and just watch him scream in agony, I think I might like him a little bit more.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm right there with you. Paul Ziggler's probably the best seller in the business right now. Maybe to a point where he might even oversell.
He does oversell a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think he's pretty much backed himself into a corner now with this whole all these fans trying to push Dolph Ziggler, say he should be a champion. And he's so good at selling and so good at being that underdog that it's almost to the point now where you don't expect him to actually win matches now. So I think his career, or as far as career progression, is basically stuck. I really don't see him going anywhere anymore, especially since he's been in the business, what, almost 15 years now?
It hasn't been that long. It was close to 10, right?
Since the Spirit Squad?
Yeah, he started with the Spirit Squad. That's what I was about to say.
That was 2004, right? 2005?
Wow, okay. It feels like it's been so much longer.
Yeah, I was just saying, I'm pretty sure because Kenny Dykstra, it would have been probably right around that time, 2004, 2005. Yeah.
So, yeah, about 10, 11 years.
Yeah. But I guess it has been a long time. Yeah, it's crazy, I agree with you guys. Crazy to think it's been that long.
I agree. We need to have some names, some local names come out, try to push these guys and make them look stronger. Because you can't really use your own main roster to push one person 1 month, and then the next month that person's the weakest, getting beat up. And that's, you know, you need those local names that nobody knows get beat up. Like you said, right back.
Like Damian Sandow and Curtis Axel, who are fantastic in the ring and even really good talkers, but they're more comedic act now, and you can't give them a legit push anymore because they're so well known as, well, he's the jobber, even though he probably has the talent to be a main star guy, a main mid-card title guy.
Yeah, I just started watching the angle in 95 when they decided to push Barry Horowitz, and he had been a jobber since like 91. And in 95, they did this whole angle that led up to him winning his first ever match. And, I mean, we're talking, they went 4 or 5 months highlighting the fact that he'd never won a match, and then they slowly just made him more and more and more competitive. And so he gets his first win, and oh my God, you'd have thought he won a championship. Like the crowd was so in it because they had taken months to build that, and they had highlighted how many times he failed, and he would get closer and closer and closer each time. And yeah, I don't know. I just like the way everything's so rushed now, and there's what, 5, 6 hours of TV that WWE alone does every week. It's a 3 for Raw, 2 for SmackDown, where they get an hour for superstars.
I think they're still running main event.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's an hour, maybe 2 hours, but I'm like, you're so saturated with one company. It's times like this where, you know, splitting your brand would probably help you because you've got so much talent right now. And if I didn't have to look at the same talent on Monday that I have to look at again on Thursday, that I have to look at again on Saturday, it's just too much.
As you could tell, we had a lot of fun recording our first ever session of Jobber's Court. While we're waiting to get to the big Royal Rumble predictions, I wanted to build in a little segment here, which is Jobber's Court behind the scenes. Enjoy.
Some people need to update Skype before they can join this call.
It says, am I?
I'm just messing with you.
What the heck?
I don't know.
Yeah, I even opened up the app, like on the actual Play Store, to see if it had a little icon that says, hey, you need to update. But
it sounds like it worked just fine. I was able to hear both of you on the recordings. All right, so does everybody know what's going on, what we're going to be talking about, that kind of good stuff, before we get officially started?
Yeah, we're talking about the new episode of My Little Pony, right?
Yeah, we're going to join the Brony Club. Sounds like a good time.
I'll have to put my kids on that one. They're the bronies here. I'm just a walking, talking to brony.
I say I'm a jabroni, but I'm not into brony, I'm not into My Little Pony. Because you're full of baloney.
Oh,
that's
here
a
we
triple
go.
Rhyme.
Beat there that we go. One.
It's got to be true. It rhymes, right?
It's got to be something.
Oh, somebody's about to get a smackdown in my house.
It'll be Raw.
Ready to call Child Services?
Nope.
I'm going to just do an introduction. So this is the first, you know, podcast for Jobber's Court. I'm the king of the court, and then you guys are basically the
servants?
Yeah, essentially.
The hired help.
You're the serfs.
Wait, does that make you Stephanie McMahon and I get to be Roman Reigns?
Whatever fantasy you got, that's up to you. All
right.
Believe that. We could put that on YouTube and then have the audio, or even if it's just an audio version too, you could do that.
Shit, I thought we were going on video, man. I put makeup and everything.
It's weird because I can't see you.
Ditto.
Can you see these? Can you see Hulk?
Well, I can see his picture now because he turned his video off.
Let's see.
That's funny. Maybe that's what that update is. Maybe you can't roll video. Very strangey.
Yeah, strange indeed.
Thanks for listening to Jobber's Court Behind the Scenes. I fully realize that if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably doing so through The Raskwatch on Facebook. If not, you're casually listening to this or was recommended by a friend, go give it a like. Anyway, now to the fantasy booking of the Royal Rumble.
All right, guys, I suppose we're getting to where we should probably get on to the main event here. And that is, what do you want to see in the Royal Rumble? What's your expectation? What are some names that you'd like to see in it? And then also, how would you want your finish?
I go, Cedric.
All righty, I go first this time. All right, let's see. Names that I would like to see in the Royal Rumble are those big names that we're hearing coming up this past week, free agents that are going to be signing in, AJ Styles. I've been asking for AJ to make his WWE quote-unquote debut because, as we know, he had been there before quite a few years ago.
He was a jobber. How about that?
There you go. So was Dean Ambrose.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another topic. But anyway, I'm just hoping that he comes out. I would like to see him. I'd like to see some old school names come out. From the top of my head, I could think – seeing Kevin Nash and Scott Hall is always a funny thing. Even if a Jake the Snake Roberts shows up just with the snake, that would be amazing to see. But I would like to know how they're gonna do this whole. Is Roman Reigns gonna be the number one entry, and we're gonna see him fight the other 29, or is he gonna come in at some point? Not sure how that's gonna work out, but I wouldn't mind seeing Roman win it again. Hopefully, it'll be against someone unexpected, and. That's probably it. That's what I would like. I would like to see some names that we haven't seen in a while. Maybe see these big names come out. AJ Styles, and I'm not sure if Nakamura still has a few dates to fulfill his contract in Japan, but there's a few, at least AJ Styles show up. Maybe a few NXT guys come up, or Jordan Gable, or even a Samoa Joe, some of the bigger names, or Finn Balor, who knows. But
So you're saying that you want Reigns to do the Rey Mysterio thing, pillar to post and come in number one and go the whole Rumble?
If it's determined for him to win, if it's determined that he will be the winner, it would make it even stronger versus maybe showing up in the later portions of 25 or 26 and then give the famous quote, "Oh, I just beat 29 other men to retain."
Yeah.
But if you're really gonna say that, let's make it true. Let's see you beat the other 29 men. Obviously, somebody else might be the one to throw the person over, but at least you were there, number one, and you went through like a Shawn Michaels, like a Rey Mysterio. I think that's what gives it that mystique. Like, hey, this guy started from the beginning all the way to the end, so he earned it.
Man, that'd be a rough one this year because you almost got to guess that they're going to go back to 2 minutes per person because of the fact that it's a championship match. And I don't think they're going to have a whole lot else on that card, so I'm guessing. You know what? Special Royal Rumble, they should go to 3-minute entries. God, that would last forever. But anyways.
That would be great.
That would be great. I would throw myself
up. Say an Intercontinental Championship, a Divas Championship, and then just go right into the Rumble.
Yeah, three-minute entries. And if you're still there after entry 10, you've already been in there 30 minutes. Could you imagine? That'd be an hour and a half match at minimum. My God.
I would love that.
But if he doesn't come in number one, at least make him one of the first ones. That way it holds more true if he's to win the title.
So in your mind, you want Reigns to win this title back. But then what's your plans for him down the road? So if you got to make a plan there and then you're going to go on to WrestleMania, what do you do then?
Well, the big names, they're not too many names out there, but
Because now that would mean you'd have Triple H trying to wrestle for the title? I don't know.
That's the rumors out there. I would rather see a Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns rematch than seeing a Triple H. I like myself some Triple H, but, you know, as we talk about jobbers and as we talk about, you know, building up folks, I think it's time for that so-called torch to be passed on. And I wouldn't want to see a Triple H winning again or even coming close. So That's just me, though. I guess I want to move on, see some of these kids who've earned sort of their stripes in the indie circuit start being pushed little by little into the main roster. Even like you guys mentioned earlier, even if they're not winning from the beginning, like many wanted Sami Zayn to win on his first match on the WWE roster, like Kevin Owens did. But, you know, I would like to see some push from the new generation and start seeing some of these older guys start moving back.
Okay, what do you think? What do you think about that?
Well, as far as surprise entrance, AJ Styles, obviously, I hope he's in it. With all the rumors going on, I think it's pretty much a fact that he's going to be showing up. I don't know if he'll actually be in the Rumble or if they'll wait till the Monday after, but that would be great to see him in it. Two surprise returns that I think will be awesome to see, even if it's just for the Rumble, would be the Boogeyman. I think he'd be awesome.
I think he gets thrown out in 30 seconds again?
Just to see the guy, I think, is awesome because he's such a unique character.
I mean, for Christ's sake, it took him longer to get to the ring last year than it did for him to get thrown out. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Another one, probably not going to happen, but I would love to see me some Spike Dudley. You know, The internet has been blowing up ever since the Dudleys came back. It'd be fantastic just to see him for a one-night show.
I'd pop for Spike Dudley. Yeah, I would.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
And, Ricky Steamboat, I mean, he's still around. You still see him in interviews every now and then. I think it'd be kind of neat to see him. He still looks like he might be in okay shape for a quick Royal Rumble pop.
Yeah, just an arm drag or two, and then...
Yeah.
Okay, that'd be...
Thrown out after about 2 or 3 minutes. Just for a pop, I think that'd be cool to see some of these legends that you haven't seen in the ring. As far as who I think is going to win... I've gone on record before to say I would love to see Daniel Bryan return. I haven't heard any news since October about his injuries. They said they were going to talk to a third doctor. I don't know if anything's come out, but I haven't seen anything about that third doctor yet.
They did. The third doctor cleared him. But at the end of the day, it's the WWE's main doctor, and he's saying no. And as long as he says no, then they won't touch him.
Yeah, I think he tweeted this week with the whole Bullet Club or Baylor Club rumors going on. I think
WWE did tweet, clear me already.
Yep. The tweet clear me already. You know, I want to be part of this. He sees something great coming, so he wants to be part of it. And I don't blame the guy.
What I wouldn't give to watch him and Nakamura.
Oh my gosh.
Have a strong style match in the WWE, and let the fans let the fans see that. And what that can do, because that's why a guy like that gets over, because they're like, oh god, he's so good. It's like they're just doing a Japanese style match. That's all. Like, I don't know if you guys got a chance to watch the whole Beast from the East live event that they did. Did you notice in all of those matches how good the matches were? Because they changed up their style and they wrestled like a stronger style. God, I love that. I just wish they could do that every day. But anyway, I digress. Go ahead.
Yeah, no worries, but. But yeah, honestly, that to me is my big hope. And again, you know, he's been cleared by multiple doctors. It's just WWE now that's kind of holding them back. And maybe that's the reason why they're holding them back, is because they're waiting for the Royal Rumble. With all these other injuries, Cesaro out, Seth Rollins out, now John Cena out, you know, you really don't have a lot of these big guys. And with the last 2 years, everyone's wanting Daniel Bryan to win. Him come back and actually win, finally get that WrestleMania moment, or not WrestleMania, I apologize, Royal Rumble moment. I think that would be fantastic. Going down the road to WrestleMania, I don't see Daniel Bryan as the guy for the main event of WrestleMania this year. And so I think I might actually be changing my prediction on who might actually win it. And I'm going to go against Cedric, the sports entertainer, and say that Triple H himself enters the ring and wins it. You know, he takes it into his own hands. You know, you put your hands on a 70-year-old man, how would you put your hands on me when you don't have a chair in your hands? I think that would be kind of neat. Plus, with all the rumors of The Rock being at WrestleMania, whether that's just a spot or if he's actually going to be in a match, I think that would be cool. And I think it would be smart from a money aspect, because you have all these injuries, to have a Rock versus Triple H for the championship more time. I think that would be pretty cool. It would be obviously selling more on nostalgia than building towards the future. But I think that would be a safe move for WWE. Or if you even want to go, say, Triple H versus Roman Reigns, I think that would be pretty cool. And it would be something as opposed to Shield versus Evolution that we got last year.
Yeah. I think that the sort of, in a rock and hard place, you got to be very careful about who wins what this year because of the way everything is. They've got to be very, very good on the way that they book this, or it could screw everything up. So, I don't know. It's a tough one. So, so you don't think with Daniel Bryan being in there, you don't think that the issue I had with Daniel Bryan personally was that even if you have him win the Rumble, he hasn't proven that he could stay healthy enough to carry a title.
Yeah, and that's as much as I would love to see it, that's why I'm changing my prediction. Is because I just don't want to see him get hurt again, you know. Like, he's put so much into it, and he's gotten so far, and he is the ultimate underdog. He's the kind of guy that you would never expect to be the top guy in WWE just because he's such a smaller guy, but he's so fantastic. And I think that kind of goes in with a lot of the somewhat new indie guys that are being pushed right now, is that they're being limited in what they're allowed to do to try to keep them safe. And Daniel Bryan is just getting hurt after hurt after hurt. And as much as I would love to see him be that guy in the Royal Rumble, money's probably better made on the safer route.
No, I agree with you there. So you would book you'd book who to win again?
I'm gonna book Triple H to walk in as the last last man to enter the Rumble and throw out Roman Reigns.
Okay. And then set that stage for WrestleMania then, so he has to chase him.
Exactly.
Cool. I was reading Kayfabe News, and they said that WWE has already announced all the surprise entries. So they said that the surprise entries this year are going to be Scott Hall, the Blue Meanie, the Boogeyman.
No way.
Mordecai. And then,
Mordecai.
Yeah. And then what about when Luke Gallows comes back, or Doc Gallows, I think that's whatever he's called.
Are they going to bring him back as Luke, or are they going to bring him in as Doc? That's a good question.
No, is he going to be Festus?
If they're talking about the Baylor Club / Bullet Club or whatever club, they better bring him back, as he's been rolling around in Japan.
I just want to watch I just want to watch him go to the ring as Festus. Biscuits and gravy, but anyway.
Oh my gosh, I totally forgot that was Festus.
And when the bell rings, he just goes crazy?
Yeah.
Yes.
But see, the bell doesn't ring till the end of the Rumble. So he just stumbles, around as Festus, like in the ring the whole time. And then, like, everybody else gets thrown out, and then the bell rings and he goes apeshit. Anyway, that's just, my mind's weird. No, I know I already wrote a long article about it, but we already talked about my feelings on Daniel Bryan. I think for me, though, man, some big names. We already know we're getting Jericho. That's already been confirmed, so that's cool. I can see them pulling The Undertaker, you know, in on this one, because it's such an important match.
It is his last real go, maybe.
Yeah, for a title, you know. And then you've got Batista, who's technically still under contract. So, he'd be good for a pop. Just please, the love of Christ, don't let him win the damn thing again. then you have, The Rock. I never say never.
Yeah.
Although I don't think in the Rumble match, I don't know. I don't know if that's something he wants to do. And that's the other thing I don't understand. How can you not get Stone Cold to come out for like a Rumble?
Well, I think the biggest thing with Stone Cold, and ever since the Paul Heyman Stone Cold podcast, I was sold. Oh my gosh, Stone Cold's going to be here. WrestleMania is in Dallas, Texas. How can Stone Cold not go for one last match? But he's gone on the record so many times as being, no, I won't do it. And maybe that's a work. Maybe Stone Cold will be in it. Maybe he will win. That would be freaking phenomenal.
I don't think so, because he was talking on it, and I listened to his podcast pretty religiously. It could be a work, but like he's talking about doing all these, he's talking about doing a lot of powerlifting. But he's also talking about how he's up to 285, and he doesn't have an ab to speak. He's like, you could call Picasso, couldn't draw an ab on me right now. But so I don't know. Several months ago, he was working out. He was training super hard, and he was talking about how hard he was training on his podcast. And I'm telling you, you want to sell out Dallas. You have Brock Lesnar coming in on Stone Cold podcast. He says something to Lesnar. Lesnar slaps him in the mouth, and then, you know, they have at it there during the podcast. Would have been, you'd have sold out WrestleMania on that day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because like I said, they had it with the Paul Heyman interview. The last 5 minutes where Steve Austin went into
the last five minutes,
like, oh, my gosh, you there. But then, when they finally did the Brock Lesnar interview, it was complete shoot.
I had heard that basically the doctors were like, nah, Steve. because his neck can't. He just can't.
Yep.
But in a Rumble match, he would not have to worry about his neck, really, because their biggest concern was taking Germans. He couldn't take the Germans, really. So, I mean, he could just get in there and brawl for a couple minutes and then, you know. But, what about old-ass Michael Hayes coming out there, Freebird style, Dallas, Texas, 60 years old, plus probably, he might be close to 70. But
Michael Hayes take out the New Day?
What about
Terry Funk?
Terry Funk is totally still wrestling. Dory Funk Jr. is like 90 and is still wrestling. just to watch, if I got to see Terry Funk come out there, if I got to see one, if I got to see Michael Hayes, like, just get one of the guys you're inducting into the Hall of Fame this year to come out there would be pretty damn awesome. And I heard they're begging Shawn Michaels.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. Could you imagine if HBK's music hits? I mean, do you want to talk about a place going crazy in Texas? Oh, my God.
Texas, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've actually been reading his book, Wrestling for My Life, recently. And it's pretty neat to kind of get a glimpse inside the mind of HBK. And I think where he's at with his life right now, especially everything he's got on with his faith, and then going on with his hunting shows, I think he's okay being away from wrestling. As much as it pains me to say that as a fan, I'm not sure if I see him with one more match.
Yeah, me neither. I don't think so. But it would just, for me, it's one of those things where you'd get to see it and you'd just be like, oh man, could you imagine just getting that one last thing just from him for just a couple minutes, getting to see, you know, that shine again. Obviously, we know we're probably going to have Kane. Big Show's going to be there. So, I mean, there's some older star power. This might be Mark Henry's last Royal Rumble. I'm trying to think. The problem is now is that you start grasping at straws for some of these big names. But what I want to happen is this. I want Roman Reigns to come out, say number 10 or 11 or whatever. He's walking to the ring, or hell, it might even work better if he's coming out of the crowd to enter the Rumble, and all of a sudden, here's the Bullet Club guys. Bam, hit him out in the crowd, attack him on his way down there, incapacitate him, make sure he can't enter the Rumble, and they just brawl with him all over the building. Then he doesn't get in or the Rumble, then that guarantees that he's going to be chasing whoever he's going to be chasing, because he won't win. it gives some sympathy, gives some sympathy for him because he got screwed again. Have this all be a big McMahon plot or whatever you want to do. Or maybe it's Triple H's revenge. At the very end, like, these guys are holding him and Triple H comes out and just waylays him or something.
But anyway, bring the Bullet Club in as hired guns?
Yeah, basically. They hired some assassins from Japan, New Japan, to come in and take him out. And I don't know if you'll have Shinny or not. I don't know if you have Nakamura in there or not. I think he still has some dates.
Still has a few dates. I think it's like maybe 2 or 3 days before the Rumbles where he's allegedly supposed to drop the title.
And then you have AJ Styles, who he could be in the actual match. I could see AJ Styles being in the match. And then you have Anderson and Gallows attack Reigns, take him out. And then what I would love to see is Undertaker come in, win this match, be the world champion one last time. And then that sets up a Reigns-Undertaker where Reigns retires the Undertaker. And that would be what I would want as a fan. Now, you do drop this Triple H storyline a little bit that's been building up for a while. But you have a lot of time. You still have other pay-per-views down the road where this could build for a while, especially with this new Bullet Club thing. You could keep this going till you got back to shoot. You could almost go
all the way to SummerSlam.
Yeah, I would say you could keep it going almost to SummerSlam. Yeah, so you get these guys with the Bullet Club guys, and maybe him and Ambrose have to team up a little bit to wrestle these guys, and when AJ joins them, and then, you know, whatever they're going to have them all do. But if they keep that together and Finn Balor comes up, what if – because the Bullet Club, were they faces or heels in Japan?
The heels.
They were heels, right? But then they wrestled as faces in the States, though.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird. But I'll say if they're going to wrestle as heels here, and you bring up Finn Balor and he turns heel and he's the demon all the time,
yeah,
and he leads the Bullet Club, I think that you could have you have a big star, obviously it's drawn. You've satisfied all your indie guys with AJ Styles and all the guys who fought TNA back in the day. And then you have just two large guys, great tag team that you could bring in and help out. So I don't know. I think if you book something like that, my other thing I would love to see is if something at the Rumble happens and maybe the Wyatt family ends up kidnapping Paulie or something, and they take him somewhere so that it maybe distracts Brock Lesnar enough. Because I don't know if they were letting managers at ringside or not. Maybe they will this year. They change that off and on. But if they did, and they, like, one of them came out and took Paulie and it distracted Lesnar, and that's what causes him to get eliminated, I think that would be a good part of the storyline, because A, they cost him the title, B, they take Paulie and they're, like, brainwashing him, and that's basically finishing their obliteration of all the ECW originals.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I will say is this, RVD is still on a Legends contract.
Oh, yeah.
So do not say never on RVD either. But that's
I'm surprised he didn't come back for the Wyatt match. I'm surprised they brought up Rhino instead of bringing in RVD.
Well, because Rhino's already, like, under an actual full working contract, and he's working in NXT right now, so it didn't surprise me, really, that that's what happened. But that's, like, my fantasy booking this Rumble. It would be to have that, basically that's what I would want to see happen, and what I would want to see occur in the Rumble, and I guess we'll find out down the road. So before we end our first session of Jobber's Court, the last thing I wanted to ask you is your favorite Royal Rumble winner. Then I think you said already, Hulkmaster, that it was Shawn Michaels in '95 is your favorite winner ever.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I didn't watch that match when it was on. I was, like I said, I was just getting into wrestling at the time, and it was that WrestleMania with him and Ramon in the Intercontinental match. That was my first match. I think that was 94, 95, maybe even 96, I'm not sure. But going back with the WWE Network for just $9.99, yep. I get to relive all those moments I missed when I was a little kid and even before I was born. So I'm the baby here, born in 88. But, yeah, going back and watching through, my favorite is the Shawn Michaels number one entry win And just because I'm a big Shawn Michaels fan, and it to me, that was just special. Plus, the first guy to win is number one. Granted, shorter matches, but still being that first guy, I thought was pretty awesome.
What about you there, Cedric? Oh, did we lose you? Weird.
Had to go run some errands. The wife dragged him away.
Oh, all right. Well, I think he was talking about something a little bit different, but I think I couldn't remember which one he was saying. I'm surprised it wasn't like the Rey Mysterio one. That was a pretty good one. But yeah, for me it was definitely Ric Flair in 92. To me, is the best winner, and I think the main reason for me was Bobby the Brain Heenan and his reaction when Ric Flair won that Rumble. Have you seen that one?
Honestly, I don't think I have. I'm going to have to go back. That was
92, yeah. And to me, it's a who's who of anybody who wrestled in the 80s and in early 90s. I mean, you have Jimmy Snuka, Roddy Piper. You had Undertaker, Million Dollar Man. I mean, all of them are in it. So it's cool. It was a cool, like, sort of linking of all these of these two eras. And then also, you have the whole storyline of Ric Flair having to be in there that long and everything that was happening with that. But I'll thank both of you guys for being here, and then I'm going to try to figure out how to get this thing cut up, and I'll get our first episode out for people to listen to.
All right, good deal. Hey, thanks for including me in this.
Yeah, no problem. And Cord is no longer in session. Have a good day.
I really hope you enjoyed this episode, the first episode of Jobber's Court. So I get ready to sign off for the broadcast. Again, I just want to thank you for having even listened to this. And please fact check us, because if you're fact checking, that means you're listening to this podcast. So, again, thank you very much. But before we completely sign out, since Cedric dropped out there toward the end and didn't get to even edit his session, I got an old school chant for him. Enjoy.